The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition. It was all eyes on Vicarage Road as Chelsea retained the Continental Cup and claimed what could be the second of five trophies this season. Flipping Eck, a sensational Sam Kerr hat-trick in the League Cup final. Super Fran Kirby also stars with two goals and four assists. And we'll be hearing from Bristol City's Amy Palmer. I'm Kate Borsay and I'm joined by Crystal Palace goalkeeper Chloe Morgan and BBC Women's Sport reporter Jo Curry. Hello to both of you.
Hi guys.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Chloe, it's great to have you with us. Jo, I know that you were at Vicarage Road at the weekend. We'll get stuck into that in a minute. But Chloe, player of the match performance a couple of weeks ago, some epic saves from you there. I know it was a defeat against Leicester, but still a really good performance for you. How's it going for the side at the moment?
Yeah, fantastic. I think the results haven't really reflected how hard the team have been working, really. I think when we looked at the start of the season and how we were doing then, and, you know, we were struggling really to stop conceding as many goals per game. And, you know, coming off the back now of into the 2021 period, the goals per game have been getting less. The defence have really been stepping up. You know, we're starting to see some really good results against the likes of London Bees, and I can really see the team going in such a positive direction. So there's a good feeling, a good mentality in the squad at the moment.
We might have been in lockdown, but I know, Chloe, you're still working incredibly hard. You've got a day job. You're a lawyer by day, a goalkeeper by some days and by nights as well. And I know that you put an awful lot into your career. I think you're just one of those people who enjoys being busy, right?
Yes, it does come with its downsides sometimes. But I think there's just so much focus on women's football at the moment. And I think when there's so many good opportunities, you just want to get involved in everything. But I'm loving it.
Jo, tell me your favourite sit down of the last week. I heard you, I was listening to the Conti Cup final actually, because we've been moving this weekend. So if anything falls down behind me, you know, it's just the big tower of boxes collapsing that I've just piled up. I heard you at half time and I can't remember for the life of me who you were interviewing. Was it Hegarisa?
Yes, so Hege Riis obviously has been speaking last week about Team GB. She's officially been announced as head coach for the Olympics in Tokyo this summer, fingers crossed they go ahead. So I had a sit-down chat with her off the back of her press conference, and she talked to me about what she's going to be looking for from the players that she is going to be selecting in a month's time. And generally what we can expect from Team GB, you know, and she says they are very capable of winning a medal. And if anyone knows how to win an Olympic gold medal, it's Hege Riis, because she has won herself.
She has previous. She certainly does. All right, well, let's get stuck into the show. And there's only one place for us to start, really, and that's at Vicarage Road for the Continental Cup final.
Fleming. Space has been found here by Wrighton, who looks for Kirby immediately. He's got him behind. Can she finish? She squared it brilliantly. And there's the opener. And it was Sam Kerr arriving at the back post. Such a good combination there is between Kirby and Kerr. They link up again, and Chelsea in front here inside 2 minutes of the Continental Cup final. Daniels has lost possession, and Kirby finds Kerr again. And it's the same end result. Kerr's pass to release Kirby, who's in again here, one-on-one with the keeper. Might square it, decided to go alone, and in it goes. What a game she's having. Now scored two, and two assists for Fran Kirby. Chelsea are running riot here, and this is already the biggest ever. If it were to stay this way, or they were to add to it, the biggest margin of victory ever in a Continental Cup final. Wrighton. Back it goes again for Fran Kirby on a hat-trick, squares it for Kerr, who's also on a hat-trick, and she gets it. Oh, those two have just been nothing short of sensational today. What a duo they are, a dream combination. And Sam Kerr with a hat-trick in a cup final. Chelsea are the 2021 Continental Cup winners.
Well, a sensational performance from Chelsea, who dominated from the first whistle in this 6-0 victory. Sam Kerr opening the scoring within 2 minutes, and the Blues never looked back. The win was overshadowed, though, by a horrific-looking injury to Maren Mjelde. Let's go to you first, Joe. Could be the first, could be the second of five trophies for Chelsea. Give me some standout moments for you. Would it be Sam Kerr's gymnastics? We saw a backflip, we saw a cartwheel. First time we've seen that in a Chelsea shirt. How about Kirby's audacious lob for goal three? She had a hand in every single goal, didn't she?
I mean, take your pick between those two at the weekend. I mean, finally, we saw the backflip, which was terrific. And as you know, it was an empty stadium. There were no fans there, but everyone cheered when she brought out the backflip for the second goal. For me, Kirby was just a different class at the weekend. We know she's had such a torrid time over the last 18 months with the heart condition. And she spoke very openly, actually, in the run-up to the final about how hard it hit her. And the fact that she actually, at some points, considered calling up Emma Hayes, her manager, and saying, I just can't do this anymore. So to see her not just come back to football, but come back better than ever. And for me, probably the best player in England right now, if not beyond into Europe as well. So for me, just the overall performance of Fran, you know, all the setups, the four assists, two goals. She only played 61 minutes and had a hand in all six goals. It is ridiculous, but wonderful to see.
What was it like for you to watch, Chloe?
I mean, it was just the most exciting game that I've seen in a very long time. I think that there was an expectation that Chelsea were going to have to go out there and dominate. And then they did just that. I think Kerr was absolutely phenomenal. And Kirby, again, I think just off the back of what Joe was saying, I mean, she was everywhere. She seemed to be playing every single position bar goalkeeper. And it was just such a dominant performance. It was just incredible to watch, yeah.
I think all of us wanted to see a good matchup, and we feared that we might not get it. And we didn't get it to some extent. But was that appeased? Was that okay? Because what we saw was actually a masterclass from Chelsea. So although it wasn't a competitive game, and I say that, you know, with the utmost kindness towards Bristol, although it wasn't competitive, it was a great display from Chelsea. Really, really, a really good advert for women's football.
Absolutely. It was world class. And I think it is going to be a difficult game when you've got the top of the table team against a team that's really struggled to get out from the bottom of the table for a few years now. You know, and they have obviously just brought on Matt Beard, and they did come off the back of quite a good win against Reading recently, which seemed to be a bit of a turning point, or what I thought might be a turning point for Bristol. But yeah, I mean, my heart always goes out to Bristol City, you know, and Sophie Bagley, you know, she absolutely did her best in the performance as well. And I think it was just a case of Chelsea just on top form. They're a world-class team. They've got world-class players. And I think that was always going to be a match that was a difficult ask for Bristol, but they did their best.
I think Bristol were hopeful too, weren't they, Joe? After the game, Matt Beard came out and said that he felt that his side showed Chelsea too much respect too early. His players were a bit overawed by the occasion, and he was disappointed in the way that his side went about things for the first time in his tenure at Bristol as caretaker manager. Was there anything that they could have done differently? Or I'll flip that aside and say that probably a lot that they could have done differently, but obviously you can only work with the personnel you've got. How did the side then try and recover from this?
I mean, look, it's a cup final, and you have to walk into these things believing anything can happen. So I'd like to think they walked into the stadium on Sunday believing they had a chance. The problem is when you play Chelsea is that when they go ahead early, teams tend to know what's coming. They tend to know they could be on the end of a hiding. And Chelsea scored within a minute and a half, and my heart just dropped, because you wanted Bristol to at least get to half an hour or, you know, beyond without conceding. But as soon as they conceded, you know, within the first minute and a half, they then conceded on 10 minutes, they then conceded on half an hour, you kind of knew what was coming. Matt Beard said in the run-up to the final, he asked his squad who had played in a cup final before, and only one player raised their hand. So not only was it always going to be a huge ask in terms of who they're playing, but the lack of experience, and possibly with that, a lack of confidence, it was always going to be so difficult for them. And then when you look at Chelsea and the fact that most of those players quite a few of them have played in international tournaments, have won medals, have played in Champions League,
the experience as well, Joe.
It's frightening.
Vanilla Harder on the bench.
I mean, what I will say, maybe come back onto it in a bit, is Chelsea's injury. So Pernille Harder did not warm up with the team. I don't believe she was fit. Jisoo Young was on the bench and didn't come on, which makes me think she may not be fit. Yeah. Beth England wasn't available because of concussion. And by the end of the game, obviously we're going to talk about Mary Mield in a minute, but also Sophie Ingle was limping very badly. So, yes, their bench is terrifying that they have that quality on the bench, but I'm just going to be interesting to see what happens with Chelsea and their injuries over the next few weeks.
Yeah. What was it like being there in a sort of a pretty unusual setup for a cup final, really?
So the League Cup final is always a slightly odd one. If you ever go to Wembley for the Women's FA Cup final, it's an incredible experience, particularly in the, you know, when you've got a capacity of 90,000 and they're getting it almost half full, which is what they have done in the past. The League Cup final is always played in what's meant to be a neutral venue, which means depending where it is, fans don't always travel. So it's always a much smaller crowd anyway. But for it to be in front of no fans at the weekend, obviously it has to happen. It's in line with government guidelines, but it was a shame, and it's a slightly damp squib because of it. And again, when we talk about Mary Mield, you know, the fact that you could hear her screaming in pain because there was just no fans in the stadium was just horrific. But, you know, fair play to the FA. They've got the final on, they've got the competition on, and they did their best with it. And, you know, I can't say how it looked on TV because obviously I was there in the stadium, but the fact that the final went ahead is great.
Let's talk about the injury to Mary Mielder then as well, Chloe. It's not nice for any player or journalist, anyone at all, to see that play out. But there has been a tweet from her, and perhaps not as bad as first thought for this knee injury. She says she's got to undergo surgery, but if everything goes to plan, she'll be back in the team this summer.
I mean, that is absolutely the hope. I mean, I'd see how much support and love she's getting from Chelsea fans, from Emma Hayes, from the players, you know, in the aftermath of all the celebrations, all the photographs that were happening, her shirt was in the background, and I can't imagine how devastating it must be to get to a cup final and have things cut short. I know from, you know, looking at a lot of the players and how they thought of her, she was a bit of a mother hen of the group, and you know, I can't imagine how it must be to have that person, an integral part of the team, missing at such a crucial time, and to not know maybe how serious things are going to be for her going forwards. But I really do hope that it isn't as serious as we first expected. It's always devastating, injuries like that.
Yeah, well, hopefully she'll be back and not overly affected by that in the long term anyway. Quick plug from me here for a piece from Katie Wyatt on Yana Daniels, the Bristol City player. Talking of injuries, she suffered 3 lateral cruciate ligament injuries during her earlier career. And Kate has written a brilliant piece about how she spent some of her rehab time scooping up elephant poo working at a zoo. It's a really nice piece. Typical Katie, tells the whole story really, really well. And that's one up on The Athletic if you want to have a look at that. And congrats to Katie, by the way, from us all, for winning the SJA Young Sports Journalist of the Year award as well. So huge congrats to Katie.
This is the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, from Bristol's point of view, earlier on, I spoke to Amy Palmer about what it was like to play in a cup final and where the team goes from here.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Amy, it's great to have you with us on the pod. Thanks for joining us on the back of that League Cup final defeat. So hard, isn't it, against a side like Chelsea when you come up against them and you concede early on, 2 down in 10 minutes. How do you sum up the game looking back on it now?
Yeah, I think obviously when you go into a cup final and it's against Chelsea, you know, it's not going to be an easy game from the word go, to be honest. But I think we look back to the start of the season. If you would have told us we'd be in a cup final, we would have taken it. So I think obviously we're not happy with the result. We're not happy with the performance, but you've got to look at the bigger picture, and we've got 7 more cup finals to go in the league. Obviously, it was a great experience for us, experience for the girls, but in reality, does it matter that much? Probably not.
Is that what you had to try and channel after the game? Because you've got
a couple of fixtures this week. It's a really tight turnaround for you guys, which is obviously physically exhausting and quite mentally exhausting, coming on the back of a major final for the club and the first major final for many of the players as well. Did you just have to put it to one side post-match when you were thinking about how you get through the defeat?
Yeah, I think obviously we've got to reflect and look at the performance, like, as a whole. It wasn't good enough from start to finish. But like you say, we've got a lot of games to come, especially the next couple of weeks. I think we've got four fixtures. So obviously for us, it's just looking at the next game. And obviously it's Man City we've got on Wednesday. So again, it's not going to be an easy game. But at this point in the season, that's where the whole squad comes into play. You can't get through a whole season without relying on, like, we can't rely on two individuals to get us through. So I think the importance of a whole squad has really come into play for the next few weeks, definitely.
Does it then emphasise the importance of being a whole squad, a collective squad, so that you can collectively get through a defeat like that?
Yeah, 100%. And one thing that Matt's reiterated since he's come in is the togetherness we have at Bristol is something that he's not experienced before. And he's been a manager at great clubs, and I think everyone can see from an outside perspective, we are such a together team. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to get us through these next few games. And we know what we need to do as a club. We know what we need to do, staff, players, everyone involved. And if we got our heads down and keep together like we are doing, I think we'll be absolutely fine.
You obviously had a game plan to start the final. You started with quite a high line, probably trying to limit Chelsea's space, but they were ruthless, weren't they? What was it like coming up against the speed of Kirby and Kerr?
Yeah, I think we go into every game thinking, like, we'll put it on them. There's no point just sitting back and allowing them to put pressure on ourselves. So, yeah, we started high, pressing, but they're world-class players. Like, We've said, like, as a team, they'll probably go on to win the Champions League. Fully believe that they have a great chance of winning the Champions League. So, yeah, it's difficult when you come up against the likes of Sam Kerr and Frank Kirby. But, you know, it's all an experience for us. We're a young side. And I think at the end of the day, we'll only be better because of it. So, yeah, we've got to take positives.
There were some good points to the game. There was a good spell for you in the second half. You had a chance yourself. I don't want to make it seem like it was completely one-sided. And for you to come up against a side like Chelsea is feat enough. Did you agree with what Matt Beard said at the end, though, that you were perhaps a bit overawed by the occasion, that he basically felt that you might have shown the opponents a bit too much respect? I sort of wondered what your side of that was.
Yeah, I think, you know, he asked us the day before in training, hands up if you've ever been to a cup final. I think one person put their hand up. If you asked that to the Chelsea players, all of them would have their hands up. So I think for us being such a young squad and having to experience that occasion as well, like not having our family and friends there, it's a difficult day, not having the fans behind us. We're already going in as the underdogs and not having that little 12th person. It is hard. And yeah, I think maybe the occasion did get to us and maybe we did perhaps show them a little more respect. But as I said before, it's all a learning experience. And next time we get into a cup final, we'll make sure we don't make the same mistakes.
Hopefully there'll be fans there for you as well. Such an important part of a cup final. And I'm gutted for you and your families that you missed out on that one. The injury to Maren Mjelde, it was an innocuous challenge from you. There's no blame there at all. You closed in on her and she sort of attempted to spin away from what I can see and has ended up injuring her knee quite badly. What's that like for you as a player? Because there was quite a loud scream, wasn't there, echoing out. That must take a bit of strength from you to kind of work that out, work that through and get on and play.
Yeah, I think it was hard for me because I'm quite an emotional person. And earlier this season, I also suffered a knee dislocation. So I was obviously, well, some of the girls said I was like grey when it happened because obviously it's not a nice position to be in. But I have messaged her and asked if she's okay. And she said it's the best news she could have got. So obviously it's not good. And it's, yeah, hard for me to experience because I've been in that position. And it was horrible to hear, like, especially because there was no fans, like it was just an eerie atmosphere anyway. And yeah, the scream was awful. But yeah, she's a very talented player and I wish her all the best in her recovery.
Yeah. And as you say, good news that it's not as bad as first feared and she can concentrate on getting back. So busy week ahead for you. You've got Man City on Wednesday night, as you mentioned, Tottenham on Sunday. How does the team move past the defeat at the weekend and move on to those fixtures so quickly?
Yeah, like I said previously, at this point in the season, having this amount of games in quick succession, it's about using the whole squad. You know, the likes of Ebbs had many minutes in not a lot of time. So, yeah, I think Matt's looking to do some rotation, give players minutes. And I think the main thing for us is to target the games where we 100% know we can get something out of the game. Of course, we go into every game wanting to win. There's no doubt in our minds that that is what we're there to do. But there are obviously some games that we are more confident in getting the 3 points. So I think for us, obviously, we've got a massive test tomorrow. And, you know, hopefully we get a point, get the 3 points. Stranger things have happened. But I think the main thing for us is focusing on Sunday and getting the 3 points there. And we'll be well up the table if we get them 3 points.
Tell us what Matt's done to kind of help you through this. You've obviously talked about togetherness, and I know Matt really loves togetherness as well. You know, watching him at West Ham, he puts a lot in his players. He loves captains and leaders together, joining everyone together as a team. Tell us what else he's been able to do with you guys.
I think the main thing that Matt's done is just made us believe. I think at Christmas, when we all looked at the table, even though none of us said it, we probably did write ourselves off a little bit. I think everyone in the WSL wrote us off. People have told us that they wrote us off. But since Matt's come in, he's put that belief in us. Even in the first game against Everton, he came in and we genuinely believed we could get the win there. Obviously, we didn't go quite to plan. But since he's come in, the way he works, he's quite old school. Everything is, if you go here, then you need to move there. It's very old school. But I think that's good because you know what he wants.
And yeah, it's basics, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's just nailing the basics down and repetition over that, and positional play he's really big on. But yeah, I think the main thing is just belief. And like I said, he's so big on togetherness and leaders. So I think that's definitely what he's brought in.
You rejoined the club last summer. You had spells at Manchester United and Sheffield United on loan. How's it been for you being back at Bristol after starting out there?
Yeah, it's been really refreshing. It's not changed much since I was last here. But when I knew I was getting released from United, it wasn't really a question in my head, to be honest. I knew exactly what Bristol was about. And for me, it was just about getting game time and getting my confidence back and having managers that believe in me. And that's both what Tanya and Matt have done. They've put belief in me. And yeah, I think Bristol is such a great club at developing young players. And yeah. Yeah, I'm very happy with my decision to come back, definitely.
Excellent. Let's talk about Yana Daniels quickly. Katie Wyatt from The Athletic wrote a really lovely article about how when she was getting over injury in Belgium, she got a job in a zoo, basically scooping up elephant poo for most of her day. From what I can gather, you know, if we look at her and her strength of character, and that whole piece by Katie illustrates that as well. Does that resonate at the club? Is she a bit of a mum figure for you guys?
Yeah, 100%. When I was first at Bristol, Jan was here as well, so I've known her for a long time. But you speak to people, no one can say a bad word about Jan. She works like one of the hardest girls in the team. She's such a hard worker. She's so down to earth. She's so if you're having a bad day, she'll be the one to come over and pick you up. She's obviously one of the older ones, more mature ones in the group, definitely. But yeah, she puts a smile on everyone's faces, and that article just sums her up. She loves the DIY stuff as well.
Does she?
Yeah, she's got her own little wood shop going on. But yeah, Jan is just an unbelievable character on and off the pitch. And I think this season's really shown her capabilities. I think in perhaps seasons before, she's so underrated. But I'm glad that now Matt's coming. I think he's given her a lot of confidence, and she's playing unbelievably under him, which is so nice for me to see. Obviously seeing her before at Bristol, and now I think she's really been given that chance to shine, and she deserves it so much.
Does she bring in woodcraft that she's made for you then?
She builds, I know she's built like a little house for the squirrels in her garden, just little bits like that. Little artwork.
I love this.
Yeah.
It puts us all to shame, doesn't it, Wednesday? Someone's as crafty as that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, thank you for speaking to us on the Offside Rule. Commiserations after the defeat on Sunday, but I know you guys will press on, focus on the league and securing your safety in the top flight of women's football as well. Thanks for speaking to us, Amy Palmer.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the other big news line we should get straight onto is the decision by the FA to end the season for tiers 3 to 6 of women's football. That is subject to FA board ratification, so it's not 100% yet, but it would be the second season in a row that's been voided. No promotion or relegation between those leagues, and no promotion from tier 3 to tier 2, the women's championship. No relegation from tier 6 to tier 7, if you're keeping up. But I know that Tom Garry from The Telegraph has come out with a line that he understands that there will still be relegation from the women's championship. Chloe, your reaction to this one, I think it's disappointing, isn't it, when some of these teams are going to be affected again for a second season running. How much of a part in the decision did they have, would they have had?
I think I'm absolutely devastated for tier 3 and 6, to 6. And, you know, you look at the impact that that's going to have, having not only the first year avoided and nulled, but the second year avoided and nulled in a row. And I know, obviously, the FA had consultation periods, and I think they asked for the opinions of clubs and players about how they should go about dealing with the season. I know, obviously, it was cut short, I think, in about October, November time. So I think only a few games were managed to be played. So there was always going to be a difficulty determining how the league was going to continue with, you know, potentially only 2 or 3 months left. But I just think that, you know, a lot of players in the national leagues especially have come out today and said how disappointed they are at the lack of support they've had from the FA. And, you know, these leagues have been phenomenal in feeding into the championship and WSL. And I think there's such an impact that's going to be had by these essentially 2 years of no football in the leagues below. So, I think it's just disappointing. Yeah, very, very upsetting.
Joe, it will affect those clubs, of course, that are top of their current tier. And by those clubs, you know, I can't mention all of them because there are a huge number of clubs involved in this picture. But if you take, for example, Wolves, they were due to be promoted to the third tier, the top of National League Division 1 Midlands in tier 4. Also Southampton as well were due to be promoted. They've not lost a league fixture since 2018, and they've got the budget, really, everything planned out to take them up. So this is going to be really tricky for those clubs who've been up there 2 seasons in a row and have to pick themselves up again for a third season next season.
It's a bit of a mess, isn't it? Let's be honest. And it always seems to be women's football that gets curtailed first. It's unfair on clubs who invest in their women's team. It's unfair on players. And the further down the pyramid you go as well, what I worry about is participation. You know, when you've had best part of 2 years, 2 seasons of not playing much football, the enthusiasm to go back the year after, I imagine, is much less. So I just really hope that next season they get a full season, full competitions, and that we don't see too many women drop out of this wonderful sport, because, you know, the whole of football has worked so hard to bring women's football on. And the last 2 seasons have given it a real bashing, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I have to feel for those players as well who were sticking around and not retiring or not moving clubs potentially or not getting on with their life in another way, because, of course, most of these players are, you know, voluntary, who'd been hanging on in there. And this will feel like a real blow to them. I have to, you know, I'm sure that we can all understand during lockdown how many of our lives have been on hold. And this is... this is a real example of that, isn't it? How, you know, in terms of their great love, in terms of sport, in terms of trying to progress through women's football, promoting women's football, this will be such a blow to some of those players.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, you've had players holding on to see if their club get promoted or whatever. But, you know, when it comes to women's players as well, there's also decisions about when to start families and so forth. And can you imagine if holding off starting a family for the past 2 seasons because you wanted to play maybe that one more year of football and for it not to happen? So, it, as I say, it's just heartbreaking. And yes, it's wonderful that we've got the Women's Super League and we've got the Championship and they're going ahead as normal, but there's so many more teams beneath them that I think this is going to have such a huge effect on.
Chloe, talking of the championship, there are 11 sides there currently, aren't there? And you've got down at the bottom quite a tight competition, really, between London Bees and Coventry. So one of them will still go down, as we understand it. So 10 teams in the league next season, it seems.
Yeah, I think it's always been my view that I think maybe the leagues potentially need to be expanded. I think in terms of, you know, how you look at the comparison between the Championship and WSL and the Men's Premier League and Championship, obviously those leagues are absolutely massive on the men's side of things. But I do think, you know, increasing the size of the leagues, a couple of teams would assist in bringing up more players from the national leagues and giving them the opportunities to play at more elite levels. And there are so many players in the national leagues who have now been effectively prevented from doing that for the last couple of years. I can't imagine how you must sit there and think, oh God, I could have been playing at Championship or WSL level had I been able to actually play and train this year. You know, that's devastating for young players, and equally, like you were both saying, that it's also devastating for the older players who might be thinking they've got a few years left or a couple of years left to really you know, show what they can do. And I really, that really resonates with myself. I mean, I only made my sort of debut into the professional game at 29, and I didn't think that I would have the chance, and that came very late on in my playing career. So I really do have a lot of sympathy for both older and younger players alike.
And this is going to affect the talent pathway as well, of course, because we rely on tiers 3 to 6 to help young talent come through. But like you, Chloe, I suppose you come in at a lower level, perhaps, or certainly other players, younger players who don't get into the elite sides, will come in through this really important structure. And this is an opportunity for them to get noticed and to get signed to Championship clubs, or maybe if they're very young, to, you know, be developed at a WSL side. So it affects them as well. I'm just reading Tom Gary's piece in the Telegraph, and Joe, I wanted to run this one by you. So he says that it's understood that after feedback from clubs, it's been decided to give teams the chance to apply to move up the pyramid via an off-field license application process. And he mentions that it could be a relief to many clubs like Southampton, for example, who fear that they may be stuck in their lower league for yet another year, despite their excellent performances. Do we know anything about that at all? I must admit, I didn't read that from the press release. So it's obviously a kind of a new line Tom's got.
So my understanding was there would be no promotion from tiers 3 to 2, or basically from 3 to 6. But if you are in 7, you can apply for a promotion to tier 6. So as I say, it's if we're struggling to understand it, I think everyone else will be at home as well. But it does say that league winners will not automatically be going up. You have to apply to get this promotion from tier 7 to 6. Why 7 to 6? I don't know. But there is obviously some hope for those sides in that tier.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, despite getting down on this, let's turn into solutions, people, Chloe.
Yes.
I'm going to apply some business speak to this. So we've got the grassroots season restarting on the 29th of March. Of course, that's all part of the government's roadmap out of lockdown. We know the FA's extended the 2021 grassroots season until the end of June. So we've got this time where clubs won't be playing in those specific tiers, but where they do have time that they can play. And so all is not lost. Do we need a mini league? Could this not have been resolved by the equivalent of a spring series that we had in the WSL? Could that not have been an option?
Absolutely. I think the FA, I feel disappointed because there just seems to be a lack of sort of thinking outside the box in terms of how this year could have been completed. I don't have the exact figures on how many dates or how many fixtures needed to be fulfilled, but could we have had just a shorter section, so with players, you know, with teams just playing each other once to finish things out, or like you said, doing a mini competition to at least have or give these players the opportunity to have some game time and to not feel like, you know, their seasons don't matter and the points they've and all the achievements and successes they've had previously don't matter. But I agree. I do think that definitely more could have been done. It's an unprecedented time, and it just needed a better more creative look at the solutions.
It would have been a great opportunity for a sponsor to come in and sponsor some sort of mini league between those tiers, you know, make it a bit different, try and, you know, try and celebrate it in some way without having to stick to the formality of a traditional league structure. Anyway, something to get thinking about. It's not too late, by the way. All that could still happen. I guess we just don't have any idea what the plans are yet. 292 clubs affected, 30 different leagues across all those tiers. So, of course, it is a bit of an organisational feat, to say the least. OK, let's move on to just covering quickly a couple of WSL games that have taken place since we spoke last week. We'll go to Reading Tottenham. That was 0-0 between those sides, played on Sunday. Both teams probably happy to share the points from this one. Jess Fishlock had Reading's best chance, hitting the post after taking the ball past a sliding Abby McManus. Gemma Davison should have scored for Spurs, but she couldn't capitalise on a mix-up at the back for Reading. Her tap-in was cleared off the line by Grace Maloney. I think for this one, Joe, Reading keen to bounce back from that defeat against Bristol. I suppose Spurs keen to end a four-game losing streak as well. But this doesn't do much for either, does it, really?
Not really. I mean, I just say I was at the final on Sunday, so I've watched the highlights back of this, and I think a draw from what I've saw was probably a fair result. I think for Spurs, it was a... If you look at the table and the fact that Bristol are now beginning to fire in the league, at least, and for their sake, you hope that that cup final defeat doesn't derail them. I don't think Spurs are safe yet. I think a win at the weekend probably would have taken them into a place where they felt safer. But I think Spurs, Birmingham, Villa, Bristol, West Ham are all still in trouble. And so I think points for Spurs, you know, are going to be vital. For Reading, a lot's being made of, I think it's their 9th or 8th draw this season.
Tons of them.
And you know, they could be up in 5th, possibly even 4th if they turn those draws into victories. But again, what I will say about Reading is that they don't have a Premier League club to, you know, their men's side is not a Premier League club. I suspect they're operating off a much smaller budget than people consider. So the fact that they're 6th could possibly push up into 5th, I think they're still having a terrific season.
Okay, well, also in the WSL on Thursday, Simone McGill's stunning strike rounded off a resounding 4-0 win against Birmingham City for Everton as they bounce back from last weekend's defeat at Manchester City. The game played at St George's Park because of Birmingham's home pitch issues also saw Jill Scott and Claire Emsley on the score sheet. Alicia Lehmann scored her first goal since arriving on loan from West Ham. Another defeat then for Birmingham means that they are just 3 points ahead of bottom side West Ham, Joe. They've got to be really careful about this, haven't they? It's the third consecutive 4-0 defeat for Carla Ward's side.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of factors that should possibly be taken into account. The fact that being played at St George's Park, you know, she's talked about the fact that it feels like they're playing on a pitch the size of Wembley and it's so wide and it doesn't always help her style of play. But also, of course, a lot was made of the fact that Hannah Hampton got an email an hour and a half before kickoff telling her that she wasn't going to make the Great Britain squad for the Olympics this summer. She was obviously devastated. They had to stop her from basically crying to get her to play the game. And it wasn't her best game, to be fair. Everton played very well. But I think Birmingham were struggling with outside factors in that game as well. But yes, you're right. You know, Birmingham, no one wants those results in a row. And I think they need to be very careful over the next few games to not get dragged back into a relegation battle, which, you know, at the start of the season, they look to be pushing up the league rather than looking down.
OK, let's move on to the Champions League. The draw was made for the quarterfinal and semi. Let's look at the quarterfinal draw. So we know now, Joe, that Chelsea will play Wolfsburg. Of course, they've got quite a rich history in the Champions League. Should never rule them out. And Barcelona will come up against Manchester City. What do you make of these ties? They're going to be played 24th, 25th of March for the first leg.
I think everyone who follows Manchester City and Chelsea will be very relieved that neither of them were drawn against Lyon in the quarterfinals. Typically for Manchester City, should they beat Barca, then obviously they'll face them in the semi-finals. Look, for me, Chelsea-Wolfsburg is the tie of the round. Wolfsburg, two-time winners, last year's finalists. But their shining light was Pernille Harder. Now, they're certainly still a world-class team. But the fact that I don't think they've got harder anymore and Chelsea do, I think could be a resounding factor. It'll be interesting to see what happens, as I say, with Chelsea's injuries. But for me, Chelsea are good enough. They've beaten German opposition before. They know what they're doing. And I think the confidence in that squad at the moment must be sky high.
Yes.
And I also believe that Manchester City, now they're sort of firing on all cylinders, have enough to beat Barcelona as well. I don't think Chelsea will ever have a better opportunity to reach the final, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, I don't know if you agree, Chloe. Joe's pretty much sent both City and Chelsea through to the semi-final there. So you've got Manchester City. If they beat Barcelona, they'll meet Paris Saint-Germain, Sparta Prague or Lyon. So that's a real tough one in the semi-final. If Chelsea beat Wolfsburg, they'll meet either Bayern Munich or Rosengard. Are we still feeling as confident about them from the semi-final onwards?
Absolutely. I think, you know, especially Chelsea, I think that they've got the absolute team squad ahead of them to go on and win things. I know that sounds like quite a bold statement to make at this stage of the competition with so many, you know, incredible teams still in it to win it. But, you know, I look at Chelsea's form, I look at the players they've brought in, I look at the strength of the squad and what they've been doing in the WSL and, you know, coming off the back of a Conti Cup win. And, you know, they're very ambitious. They've always been ambitious. And I think I think they've got a very good chance of going on and winning things.
Okay, so that's the Champions League sorted. Really, really exciting, that one. Let's go to the forthcoming WSL fixtures. This Wednesday, we've got Everton against Chelsea, Villa take on Brighton, and West Ham play Birmingham. We've also got Bristol against Man City. Then on Friday, Arsenal versus Manchester United. And then on Sunday, goodness me, Bristol City are going to be exhausted. They're up against Tottenham. Three games in a week. Joe, pick us out a fixture that really appeals to you.
Friday night, Arsenal, Manchester United, 6:30. It's such an important fixture when it comes to that third Champions League spot. Arsenal 6 points behind, but with a game in hand. So if they beat Manchester United and win that game in hand, they go above Manchester United on goal difference. If Manchester United win on Friday night, then the Champions League spot is in their own hands. So that, for me, is the big one this week.
Chloe, time for you to pick out a fixture now from the forthcoming WSL action.
I would have to say the West Ham-Birmingham City game. You know, that is a battle at the bottom, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at the teams and what they're trying to do is to, you know, to get a little bit further up and to get those last few points on the board to make sure that they're safe. And, you know, I think that is going to be a very competitive game. Both teams will definitely want to win that one. So, yeah, I'll definitely be tuning in for that one.
Yeah, and it could, you know, ensure Birmingham's safety, you know, not to kind of blow it out of proportion too much, but this is a chance for them to take points from a West Ham side that are really struggling under Ollie Harder.
Yeah, I agree. I think if West Ham don't pick up points in this game, I think it is going to be a very difficult season and it's going to look like a very big risk to them. And I think if, like you said, I think if Birmingham do manage to pick up these points, I think there will be a general consensus, maybe I'm speaking too soon, but that they will probably be safe.
Hopefully.
I would hopefully imagine they would be safe, yeah, with those extra 3 points. But no, it's definitely going to be a big battle. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly is. All right, Chloe, we'll leave the forthcoming fixtures just there. And of course, we'll have a preview of the Champions League fixtures in next week's show as well. That's all we've got time for this week. Congrats to you, by the way, Chloe, nominated in the Sports Star of the Year Awards for Diva Magazine.
Thank you. Yeah, that comes as a bit of a shock. I didn't realise that was happening. So yeah, when it popped up, I was very, very shocked. I feel very honoured though.
What about the competition? Are you up against Beth Mead, Leanne Sanderson and a few other names there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it feels like such a privilege just to be amongst names like that because they do so much for the LGBTQ plus community. And I'm grateful to be on that list.
Well, if you've enjoyed hearing Chloe on the podcast and, of course, catching her in action for Crystal Palace, you can give her a vote, have a look on her Twitter, give her a follow, and you can vote for her in this year's Diva Magazine Awards. You better pin that tweet, Chloe, I think, so we can all find it. And thanks very much for taking part in the show today. Quick plug, by the way, offsiderulepodcast.com for some brilliant women's content. And do give us a follow at offsiderulepod on Insta and on Twitter, where you can find out much more about the show and about various other things going on in the world of women's football. Chloe, we'll catch you soon. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Joe, thanks so much for getting involved in the show. I trust you've got a busy week ahead.
Well, you've just talked about the fixtures that are coming up. I've also got some other women's sport that's happening this week, a couple of stories. But yeah, do you know what? Women's sport is up and running at the moment. And as a women's sport reporter, I couldn't ask for more at the moment. So very busy, but very happy.
It's great to have you on the show again. And we'll speak to you soon.
See you guys soon.
We'll be back Tuesday, 23rd of March. Until then, have a great week.
You've been listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Offside Rule at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Offside Rule WSL edition is a Muddy Knees Media production.
The Athletic.